This is SEC Talk.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to it. I know it's been quite a while since we've talked to each other, but guess what? We're finally back with it. You heard it off the top there, SEC Talk. This is your host, Holden. Glad to have you guys here and glad to finally get some content to you. Sorry that it's taken so long to get back to you guys. I've been sick. My whole household has been sick and under the weather really for the past few weeks. Had a lot going on, so hadn't been able to get down and get the show back out to you guys. But hey, we're finally going to get to it. This is a late review of the SEC Championship game, as well as kind of, a lot of stuff is going on this week. This week that I'm recording, we're well past the Heisman Trophy. We're well past college football playoff decision making. We've got a lot of coaching changes, a lot of major transfers. We got bowl games. We got one game already playing in the SEC. We've already got another game that's being opted out of because of COVID as it strikes back. So we got a lot to get to. We're going to blow through it pretty quickly just because that's the way we do it. Try to get this to you quickly but efficiently and hopefully entertainingly. If that's even a word, more entertaining. Anyway, you guys, you can figure that out. You're smarter than I am. But anyways, let's get into it. On Twitter, at SEC Talk 20. YouTube, make sure you guys follow us there as well. Whenever we do put up an episode, you guys will be able to check it out there. Hit that bell, I guess it is, so that way you get the notification. Is that what it is? Yeah. Anyway, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, and the support link will be in the description if you guys feel like supporting the show. Haven't been very active on the Facebook page or Twitter lately. Again, I've been down, and if I'm down, not much has happened. So, sorry about that, but hey, we're going to get this back to you. Again, off the top, we're going to talk about the SEC Championship game. Georgia, Alabama, it was a big one. Not at all what we were really expecting. Really not at all what anybody in the country was expecting. But we're going to talk about it. Let's dive into it now. At the time, number one, Georgia 12-0 coming into this SEC Championship game undefeated. First time that Georgia was undefeated in quite a while. Coming in this, we're really excited for Georgia to have the opportunity to hopefully get over the hump that we have been talking about with Alabama. Alabama coming in this one, not much of a chance, but you never can rule Alabama out. We learned that. Alabama coming in at number 3, 11-1 into this game. And we should have known better. Should have known better. I should have known that better being a Georgia fan. And I tried to be somewhat not so biased when I did the preview, which you could tell there's a little bit of bias in there. But it's mainly just because Georgia has been playing so consistently, even though the opponents are not the caliber of Alabama. I understand that. Everybody's going to make that same comparison, that same argument. Georgia, you've played Kentucky. You've played Auburn. You played Arkansas. All of these teams. You played Florida. Yeah, all these teams are bad. And it's like, I understand that. I know that Alabama is a better team than all those teams. But in the comparison of the games that are alike, such as Florida, Georgia took care of Florida. Alabama did not. Arkansas, Georgia took care of Arkansas. Alabama did not. Auburn, Georgia took care of Auburn. Alabama did not. So in the games that are comparing each other, and I know that you can't compare one game to the other, because that if you do that, you're just going to think you walk away with it, and this right here happens. This game, SEC Championship game, Georgia should have been on the other side of this. Obviously, my opinion, but in really all of America, except for a good portion of you guys over in Alabama, I get it. Nobody saw this coming. Multiple Alabama fans that I talked to thought that Georgia was going to walk the floor with them. And would I have loved that to happen? Yeah, but that's not what happened. You know, that is where you really cannot, and maybe that's enough of an eye-opener for teams. You can't look at those matchups that are the same team, because teams don't prepare for that same team the same way. They don't. I know Georgia looked at this game. They looked at a lot of film from Auburn to see what Auburn was able to do to slow Alabama down. Looked at a lot of film from Arkansas and what Arkansas was able to do, what LSU was able to scheme up. And Georgia did all of those things. They did all of the things that the defense for those teams did against Alabama and some, and it didn't work. Clearly, Alabama 41, Georgia 24. Steamrolling Georgia. That's all there is to this. First quarter, it's Georgia 3-0. Coming into the second quarter, Georgia takes a 10-0 lead, and that's when we all started to go, okay, hey, maybe Georgia's going to start to stomp on. No, Alabama comes roaring back. By the end of the half, Alabama's got the lead at the end of the first half, and they never look back. Easily scoring right into the third, and then putting up another couple of scores there in the fourth, which I did say this, Georgia, to win the game, hey, we need to finally score in the fourth quarter. Georgia, they scored in the fourth quarter, but they did not score in the third, and they only scored once in the fourth quarter. 7 points in the second half is not going to do it. Not going to do it against the team. And, by the way, Heisman Trophy winner, Bryce Young, we'll get to that in a minute, winning that trophy, but as elite as he was in this game. And I talked about this on the Georgia show that I do. Georgia, like I said off the top, did what these other teams did to try to be effective against Alabama. And part of me thinks that maybe they did too much. Maybe they kind of got away from what Georgia is, trying to play what so many other teams are playing, that they forgot their own identity. And it kind of came and bit them in the butt a little bit. And, again, part of that, again, is difference in competition. I understand that when you have an elite quarterback, when you have good running backs, and when you have elite wide receivers as well. And I say good running backs because I know Brian Robinson Jr. was not quite 100% coming in this game. He was still effective. He is an elite running back, but when you're not 100% in a game, it's hard to play at the elite level. I mean, looking at it, Alabama was held to 115 yards on the ground. If I look at the number here, yeah, 115 yards. So it's not like it was very explosive on the ground, but again, he was not 100%. I think if he's 100%, maybe that number changes a little. Either way, you got a couple of elite wide receivers that are out there as well that are able to get wide and make big things happen. And Georgia's defense, we talked about this early on, that the secondary was always going to be the question. The front seven has been able to bail that secondary out so many times and time in and time out where they haven't had to, you know, really play hard in the secondary. And a couple of times they have been beat deep in those situations. And that happened a lot in this game. Critical for Georgia was the times that Georgia did make their critical errors and mistakes. That happened third downs, or that happened busted coverage. And when the busted coverages happened, guess what? It was either chunk yards or it was an explosive touchdown. And then third down, when you have Alabama beat and you all you got to do is lock it down and just making critical errors and mistakes, things that Georgia has not done all season long. Things that even though it's higher caliber being Alabama, Georgia made mistakes that they had hands on people and could have made things a lot easier on themselves, and they didn't. A lot of times Georgia was shooting themselves in the foot. But at the end of the day, it's not all about the fact that Georgia's defense shot themselves in the foot, because offensively you still have to be able to move the ball. But Alabama, credit to them, also did their job at moving the ball down the field and playing very effectively. I said before this game that there's no way Alabama can win on dink and dunk 8, 9, 10-yard little passes here and there. There's no way they can do that all night and win on that, and they did. Because another thing I said is Bryce Young's got to get the ball out of his hand quickly, and he did. He did, watching the film back. I mean, time and time and time again, this guy, I mean, he would take a couple of steps, boom, he already hit his read. He's already been through two or three reads and finds the guy he wants. He's wide open, boom, hits him. Even if he's not wide open, he's putting it in a tight pocket, but he's putting it where it's supposed to be. Now, there were a couple of times where Georgia's defense was successful and able to get in his face and did make a couple of disruptions and not the most accurate passes. But at the end of the night, 26 for 44, 421 yards and three touchdowns, no mistakes. I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to be okay. And Georgia's defense, yet again, like I was saying, just couldn't get off the field on third down. They allowed Alabama to be 50%, 7 for 14 on third down, whereas Alabama was able to hold Georgia 3 for 12. 3 for 12. We'll get to the offensive side of the ball in just a minute on the Georgia side, but let's talk offense about Alabama, because Alabama did a really good job in this game. Like I said, Bryce Young, you know, I just gave you the numbers there. Brian Robinson did run the ball 55 yards on 16 touches, no touchdowns. Bryce Young did scramble a few times in this one, got 40 yards on the ground by himself and a touchdown. He finally used his legs to a very, very, well, I guess best word to use is just to advantage himself. You know, Trey Sanders, 6 carries, 21 yards, 1 touchdown. That was all they got on the ground, 115 yards. Jameson Williams, the guy of the night. 7 touches, 184 yards, 2 touchdowns, have yourself a night. And then prayers up to John Metchie here. He goes 6 touches, 97 yards, and a touchdown, but did look like, I believe they ended up saying, I need to look back on this, if it was an MCL or ACL sprain. I think they said it was ACL tear, that he will be out, unfortunately, for the rest of the season. So they will be without one of the key, can't talk all of a sudden. They will be without one of their key receivers. But don't sleep on Jaleel Billingsley. Slay Bolden, you know, you still got a couple of guys back there that are going to be able to make things happen for you. And I also got a shout-out here, Treshawn Holden, just because, hey, my name's Holden. You got another guy, last name at least anyway, nonetheless. Bryce Young got the ball out to a lot of guys effectively, ran the ball when he needed to effectively. Alabama's defense did their job, creating multiple turnovers, a pick six in this game, two turnovers in the game. The one blemish that could have came on Alabama that they were lucky Georgia's defense didn't pounce on, and when I say pounce on, it's literally all Georgia would have had to do to get on the ball, is Bryce Young scrambled one time, a guy tackles him from the back, and there's a fumble. It's right there next to Bryce Young. Who was it? Nolan Smith, I think it was standing over the ball, and instead of dropping on the ball to have the turnover, he tried to scoop it up, and Bryce Young was able to just muscle his arm in there and take the ball before he could really pick it up. And that's a mistake on Georgia's part. All you got to do is fall on that ball, and then you get a turnover. Who knows what happens from there? You know, one or two plays in this game go a little bit differently, and you can talk about a 14-point difference in a game, you know, between the mistakes on offense for Georgia, the mistakes on defense for Georgia. Alabama, again, I said in this game, for Alabama to win, you got to play perfectly. And to play perfectly, Bryce Young has to be able to get the ball out of the pocket quickly. Boom, he did that. Can't get sacked. How about this? Bryce Young sacked 7 times against Auburn. Against Georgia, number one defense in the country, Bryce Young never got sacked. Never got sacked. He got hurried a couple times, but never got sacked. You cannot expect to win a game when you cannot get to the quarterback efficiently. Can't do that. As a number one team in the country, you got to do that. And we've said this year in and year out, Georgia has these games where they just don't show up. They don't show up in, for whatever reason. And all season long, we've kind of been waiting to see if Georgia has that game. And it hadn't happened. And this is the game where we thought Georgia showed up in the first quarter and a half, and then really they just kind of fell apart. That's all there is to it. Offensively, Stetson Bennett did all he could to make the ball move. I mean, him alone, I mean, he almost threw the ball for 50 times, but 29 for 48, 340 yards, 3 touchdowns. So that's pretty good numbers. But when you throw 2 interceptions in there, and one of those interceptions being a pick six, it makes it a lot tougher. Makes it a lot tougher. In Alabama, they were able to, you know, gain on those turnovers, obviously one being the pick six. But when you get points off of the other one as well, that is just negative as far as offense goes for Georgia. So credit out again to Alabama in this one. They played perfect football, did not make mistakes. When they did make mistakes, they recovered, and Georgia could not do that. I'm hoping, for my sake, again, this is the bias side that I'll give you for a second. For Georgia's sake, let me say, you got to hope that this was just that one game where you just, for whatever reason, just didn't have your head in the game. Part of that could be because of the fact that Dan Lanning is going to be Oregon's head coach. That could be part of it. I'm not saying that's all of it, but that could be part of it. We'll talk about that here in just a minute as well. But Georgia's defense just really didn't have it together in this game. And again, I think part of that is just because they were trying to do too much, whereas if they would have just played Georgia football, they may have been much better off. Much better off. And I said this in the past too, you know, and this was actually on the other show that I did earlier this week, was if you guys don't understand this, and most of you do, and I'm sure you do, but if you don't, this is just something to think about. If Alabama gets beat by Texas A&M, do you think that Alabama's not going to watch that film back and try to learn and fix the mistakes they made from that game? They do. So if you think that when LSU played Alabama really close and Auburn played Alabama really close, yes, Georgia's paying attention to that film to kind of see what they were doing and to play off of that to see if they're able to be successful at it. But guess what? At the same time you're doing that, Alabama's watching that same film saying, okay, if somebody wants to attack us like this, we have to make sure that they cannot be successful at using the same game plan that these other teams used. So they are game planning to say, okay, we have to fix these mistakes. We have to overcome the mistakes that we've made in these past games and these other games that we've played against. And if we can get better and be better than we were in those games, no team can beat us if they take that same scheme. And that's a lot of what happened in this game. Georgia did try to do what Auburn did. They did try to do what LSU did, and it was not successful. Again, a couple of times they were able to get in the pocket and caused some disruption, but at the end of the day, it was not enough. Not enough. A lot of guys for Georgia were gassed in this game. Jordan Davis, in particular, had, I mean, an okay night, but just really wasn't firing all cylinders that we're used to seeing a guy like that. A guy like that play really well, but it just really didn't show up as much as you would think. A guy that did have a really good night, Henry Toa-Toa. I mean, he had a really good night. Will Anderson, he was able to as well. Also had a sack in there and another tackle for loss too. So he was able to kind of wreak a little bit of havoc on that that Georgia offense as well. Brock Bowers, he was yet again the leading receiver for Georgia. 139 yards, one touchdown. He is the guy to me that just kind of kept things going, kept hammering. And then the other guy that I was surprised to see as much as we did was George Pickens. Two touches, 41 yards. He's your second best receiver, though. When your second best receiver is only getting 41 yards, that's tough. Whereas John Metchie's getting 97 for the Alabama side. Georgia does run the ball 109 yards. No touchdowns on the ground here. James Cook at the top, 38. Kenny Mack behind him at 32. So really good game again overall by Alabama. This first half of this game was really good. Third quarter was still good and not quite out of hand. But by the fourth quarter starting to get deep, we kind of knew that this one was pretty much out of hand when Alabama took it on down after that pick six, making it, in the end, 41-24. But again, what a great game. We knew it was going to be a good one. I said it beforehand, I would be very surprised if Georgia walked away with this one. I think I had a pretty tight prediction. Let me see if I wrote it down here. Okay, evidently it's not on that sheet, but I think it was a fairly tight prediction, like, I don't know, 34-20, something like that. Georgia's way, of course, but again, that's just because Georgia's been so consistent. Alabama, unfortunately, this season has not, and maybe the tide has turned, no pun intended, but maybe that tide has turned coming into this game where Alabama finally got a fire lit under. Maybe that's it. Maybe they finally got some things figured out, got some stuff straightened out, and are starting to roll with it. I don't know. I think we'll learn a lot of that once we get into the college football playoff, because that's where we're headed next. That's the next conversation we're going to get to. But I do want to hand out that credit to Alabama on a really great game. Way to come into this one. You know, Nick Saban had the funny quote there after the game in the press conference talking about the rat poison that was out there for Alabama, which is true. Alabama had a lot to live up to, and they did it. They did it very well. He was talking about how the rat poison was real yummy that the media put out there. So, again, just credit out to Alabama on that one. Really good game. A tough loss for the Dogs, but luckily they do find themselves in a good position moving forward, and that is the college football playoff. It lines up like this. You got number one, Alabama, number two, Michigan, number three, Georgia, and number four, Cincinnati. So you get Alabama and Cincinnati in that first one at 2:30, and then you get Michigan and Georgia at the late game, 7:30, in the Orange Bowl down in Miami. So couple of fun games here. A couple of fun games coming up on New Year's Eve. So, staying up late to watch the late game. We will know the fate of Alabama and Cincinnati earlier in the day. And then you got to wait for, again, that late game closer to the new year to see who's going to be playing either Alabama or Cincinnati in that one. My early kind of prediction on this is if Alabama shows up the way that they did against Georgia, I don't know that there's anybody in the country that can beat them. I really don't. I think if Alabama shows up the way they did against Georgia, Cincinnati does not stand a chance. If Alabama shows up the way that they did against Auburn, against Texas A&M, LSU, Arkansas, Florida, those games, Cincinnati will hang around and can make it a very, very interesting start to the new year as far as it goes for the college football playoff. Then you got Michigan and Georgia, two powerhouse defenses matching up. This should be a low-scoring affair. Not sure, you never know. And this is, I'll use the same comparison. If Georgia plays the way that it did against Alabama, Michigan will steamroll them. If Georgia plays the way it did against Alabama, Georgia plays the way it has all season, and Michigan plays the way it did against Ohio State, this is going to be a very, very good game. And that's kind of the way I'm leaning. That's kind of the way I feel like that one's going to shape up. But you do have the opportunity for the rematch of two SEC teams getting in the playoff here and possibly getting to see each other yet again in the national championship like we had back in the 2017 season, which ended up being, the 2018 national championship between Alabama and Georgia. That'd be kind of fun. So you do get two SEC teams back in it again. That's really exciting. We're looking forward to that one on New Year's Eve. Now, again, we talked about this earlier. Heisman Trophy. It goes to Bryce Young, very, very much so. I don't think there was much doubt in the books, and even looking back at some of the numbers that they showed up for, like the voting and all that good stuff, Bryce Young pretty much walked away with that one, and we kind of expected it, congratulations out to him. You know, we're always going to be the same way as far as SEC goes, rooting for that SEC guy, so that was awesome to see him win that, and congratulations out to Bryce Young. Now, getting down to some of the coaching changes, because there were some. We've talked about this. Billy Napier into Florida. We already know Notre Dame's Brian Kelly, now at LSU. Let's see who else we got. Dan Lanning headed out to Oregon. So he's out of the SEC now, headed up to Oregon. I was trying to remember a couple of the other ones off the top of my head because I don't have the notes in front of me. Imagine that, but hey, that's okay. Then we get down to it. Let's see. I thought we had one other big hire that I was curious about, but it's not really coming to me right off the top of the head. So I know Brian Harsin is making a good bit of changes there at Auburn. So that's a little bit of something, you know, getting rid of Mike Bobo and changing some stuff up there. Could be a good thing. Might not be, because you do have a lot of transfers. Right now, ever since the SEC Championship game and some before it, the transfer portal has lit up. By the way, I'm going to give you this a little bit of a thing right here. I'm doing this in the middle. This is obviously December 22nd that I'm doing this because I'm kind of keeping up with the Missouri-Army game. Missouri's up by one right now, but Army is on the Missouri 24-yard line with 20 seconds left. A field goal for Army here wins this game. So that's the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl. Pretty good game here. It's kind of been back and forth a little bit. And Missouri came back here in the fourth quarter and took a lead by one here just a minute ago. So now we're down to 3 seconds left. Army taking the final timeout. And you guys aren't going to care about this because you're just going to look at ESPN tomorrow and go, oh, okay, Army won by two because they're going to keep this field goal here and probably win this game against Missouri. But we'll get to that in a minute. Back to the coaching changes. The change at Georgia with Dan Lanning leaving is an in-house change, I guess. Glenn Schumann and Will Muschamp taking over as co-defensive coordinators moving forward. But Dan Lanning will stick around for the college football playoffs, so that is a good thing for Georgia as far as that goes. Now, getting to some of those major transfers that we were talking about, I'm going to talk about the major ones first because there are a ton. I don't know that we would have enough time to do an entire list of all these players that are in the transfer portal right now. And there's the end of the game. Missouri walks it off with a field goal to beat, or excuse me, Army walks it off with a field goal to beat Missouri 24-22. So that one gone final in the SEC. Back to the major transfers. Again, it'd take forever to go through them all, but I'm going to hit some of the high ones. There's a couple of other higher ones, and I think there was one of a guy who transferred to Texas A&M, and I'm completely blanking on it right now, so forgive me for that, but I'll go through the major ones. Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma. This is major just because he's headed to South Carolina. And a team, I know the conversation has been, hey, if you're not successful at Oklahoma with a great offense, plenty of weapons, and you're playing against Big 12 opponents, what makes you think coming to the SEC playing for South Carolina with less caliber guys is going to make you any more successful? And I'm going to tell you this. I understand that logic, but I also understand the logic of Shane Beamer and Oklahoma, that connection. Yeah, that's some of it. But it's really the fact that South Carolina with Luke Doty and the back and forth with, I forget who the other guy who's came in for him, this season too. I know we're getting late in the season. I've been out a couple weeks and I'm completely blanking on everything right now. But I think Spencer Rattler can really come in here and make some noise at South Carolina. Now, pump the brakes, South Carolina fans. I get it. But I've already seen y'all coming out of the woodwork saying, okay, Georgia, step out of the way. South Carolina's winning the East next year. We go into the national championship. Pump the brakes. And listen to what I said. Rewind about a minute. Spencer Rattler was not successful this season at all in the Big 12 with much, and no knock on South Carolina wide receivers and things of that nature, but he had a lot more talent there at Oklahoma than what is sitting at South Carolina right now. Now, none of that talent is left at Oklahoma. None of it. Oh, that was it. Brent Venables also leaving Clemson, headed to Oklahoma. That's big news. But again, that's just, in my opinion, before all this transfer stuff happened, there's a little bit better players, that's all there is to it, at Oklahoma as compared to what there is at South Carolina. Now, that's not to say some shining stars don't show up. That's not to say that doesn't happen. We had a big early signing day come up here earlier, and craziest thing about that to me was not necessarily where South Carolina was. Texas A&M was a surprise to me being at the top of that, Alabama, and then Georgia right behind them, second and third. But it was the fact that Florida was at the very bottom. Vanderbilt recruited better than Florida did. And it just goes to show me, and this is a little bit of a knock on Florida, it's kind of crazy to me that Dan Mullen, I really don't think he actually did know when recruiting season was. I really don't think he was. I don't think he actually did. But anyways, back to the South Carolina stuff. I really do think Spencer Rattler at South Carolina could light a little bit of a fire there. Having a big-name quarterback on campus playing for your team, I think can be just enough for South Carolina to be fairly successful. Again, pump the brakes. Don't think you win the East the first year with them. Don't think you go to the national championship. Now, could completely eat my words next year if something like that happened, but a lot is going to have to happen at South Carolina for that to happen, in comparison to this year at least. So, a couple of the other ones, Zach Calzada leaving Texas A&M. Bo Nix out at Auburn, headed to Oregon. Kind of a fun thing there is the first game, again, we talked about it, Dan Lanning out of Georgia, headed to Oregon. Once we get done with the college football playoffs, the first game of the season, Chick-fil-A kickoff in Atlanta next season, the 2022 season, is Georgia and Oregon. So not only will Georgia get to see Dan Lanning again, being on a opposite team as a head coach, but they'll also get to see Bo Nix. Instead of in an Auburn uniform, he's going to be in Oregon. And I will say this, I think that's a pretty good fit. I really do. I think Bo Nix in an Oregon kind of a system, the way that Oregon's ran over the years, obviously that could be changing now that Dan Lanning's headed that direction. But with that kind of a fit, I don't know, something just tells me he fits pretty good there. It's kind of strange with the legacy kind of quote-unquote deal of Bo Nix at Auburn, the fact that he ended up leaving. I mean, I somewhat get it, but at the same time, I think there's a little bit of something up with Brian Harsin and some of those guys for some of the changes that are happening there. But Bo Nix, nonetheless, headed to Oregon. There's a lot. I could go through more. I know there's some bigger names, but that's just a few that I kind of wrote down that I wanted to go through. Now, let's talk about some of the bowl games before we jump down to some of the news most recent. Just talked about the first one here. First one in the SEC, out the door, Missouri. SEC 0-1 starting bowl season here. 0-1 as Missouri takes our falls to Army. All right, my computer is scrolling the opposite direction. Now let's get to, I need to just do this. Let me go to the SEC here. It's going to make life a lot faster on all of us, not the Pac-12. All right, here we go. Like I said, Missouri falling to Army. That's the first one. You got UCF in Florida, 7 o'clock. That one's on December 23rd. That's actually tomorrow. Florida, a 7-point favorite. That is the Union Home Mortgage Gasparilla Bowl. And by the way, I really think they're just kind of grasping for names of bowl games now. But that is what it is. Then at 12 o'clock on December the 28th, you got the Ticket Smarter Birmingham Bowl, Houston and Auburn. That should be a pretty good one. Same day at 6:45 on ESPN, the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Mississippi State and Texas Tech. And Thursday, December 30th at 11:30 that morning on ESPN, you get North Carolina, South Carolina. That'll be good on Duke's Mayo Bowl. Then at 3 o'clock, same day on ESPN, you get the Trans Perfect Music City Bowl, Tennessee and Purdue. Should be a fun one there. Then Friday, we get to the big ones we just talked about. Obviously, both of these surrounding the SEC, and I was wrong. It's not 2:30. It's actually 3:30 on ESPN, Cincinnati and Alabama, and they are in the Cotton Bowl. And then Georgia and Michigan at 7:30 on ESPN in the Orange Bowl, both of which are college football playoff semifinal games. Alabama's a 13.5-point favorite in theirs, and Georgia is a 7.5-point favorite in theirs. Then we get down to New Year, 2022, January 1, 12 o'clock on ESPN2. You got Penn State and Arkansas in the Outback Bowl. Should be a good one. Same day, this is where all these are. At 1 o'clock, you get on ABC, Iowa and Kentucky in the Citrus Bowl. And then at 8:45 that night on ESPN, this one is going to line up to be a good one. It's the All-State Sugar Bowl, number 7 Baylor taking on number 8 Ole Miss. Then on Tuesday, January 4th at 9 o'clock that night, LSU taking on Kansas State in the Tax Act Texas Bowl. And there's a name that you did not hear on that, and that is Texas A&M And that is because of the next conversation that we are going to have, and that is COVID is kicking back. It's kicking back. Jimbo Fisher announced he does not have enough scholarship players to be able to move forward with playing in their bowl game this season, so they are unfortunately going to have to drop out of the bowl game. And that takes Texas A&M out. That takes what we had a record, which was 13 of the 14 SEC schools playing in bowl games. Maybe the record is that they're bowl eligible. I don't know, but hopefully that record can still stand. But the game will not be played. It's not going to be played, and there are a lot of rules that have come out in this. You know, I've seen where some Georgia players have some sickness. I've seen where a bunch of other teams are having to deal with a lot of sickness right now, which is kind of a scary thing. I know we had the flu outbreak with a lot of teams going on earlier this season, and now coronavirus has kind of kicked back in, and it's tough, especially because the latest that came out, I can't remember if this was College Football Playoff Committee or who exactly made this announcement or rule, but the new rule as of now to be able to, I guess, fight against this, and it's really not fighting against it as much as bowing down to it, and it is if a team has to forfeit, and this is based on College Football Playoff, so this is if Alabama, if Michigan, Georgia, or Cincinnati, if one of these teams could not play, then the other team can move forward to the College Football Playoff national championship due to the other team having to forfeit due to not being able to play because of COVID. That's tough. And this is the crazy thing here, too. If three teams, so let's just say Bama, Michigan, and Georgia, if those three teams, the night of the semifinal game, all said, hey, we cannot play because of COVID. It struck our team so bad, we cannot take the field and effectively play this game. Cincinnati would therefore move forward to the national championship, and since they're the only team who would be there, would therefore be named a national champion due to forfeit from the other teams because of COVID. Instead of rescheduling these games, forfeits become enough to allow someone to not only win a game that they don't play, but also win a national championship with the possibility of never touching the field. I don't like that. I don't like it at all. I don't know. I understand that there's a lot that goes into tickets and sales and all of that. I trust me when I say I understand that. But listen, change it up. I understand everybody's out of work right now. They have the opportunity. They've bought the tickets. If you think for one second that if Alabama and Georgia were to play again in the national championship, even if it is in Indianapolis, do you think that if you had to move it another week back, even 2 weeks back, that stadium would still not be full? And if you think that it wouldn't, you're wrong, because people are still going to come to these games. Are there going to be people mad? Absolutely. You can't make everybody happy. You can't do that. So it's a little unnerving that they would just cancel it all together and allow the forfeit to be what it is instead of trying to reschedule it. I mean, I understand that you can't prolong it too much, but at the same time, I mean, it seems to me that there's something that could be done to kind of eliminate that happening. But as of right now, that's not it. That's not it. The rule right now is that a team can move forward to the national championship by forfeit and can also win the national championship by forfeit, which is kind of a sad thing if it comes to that. Hopefully it doesn't. I know right now Georgia's battling it, and again, I know some other teams are. I'm not sure as far as in the rest of the College Football Playoff teams between Alabama, Michigan, and Cincinnati. I'm not real sure where they look as far as that goes. I know most all teams are very heavily vaccinated. I know Georgia's one of the teams that has a lot of vaccinations, and it's like we've said, it's not foolproof. Doesn't necessarily mean that you can't get it. And I know a lot of people say that, well, if it's a vaccine, you should be able to get rid of it completely. If it's not getting rid of it, why take the vaccine? I mean, I understand that, but I also understand that it's at least the possibility of kind of limiting some of what could be terrible. You know, I'm not saying it's 100%. Again, you have the freedom to do whatever you want. You want to go get the shot, get it. If you don't, you don't. Trust me, I don't care which way or the other that you do it, because everybody, in my opinion, you have the right to do whatever you feel like doing. It is a free country for a reason. And a lot of that right now is kind of being attacked. And again, I don't like getting political on here, and I'm not going to try to, but I think it's your choice. It's your choice on what you do and what you don't want to do. I just don't like that the choice is now if a team can't go forward because of this virus, that now they just forfeit and their entire season they've worked all these weeks being safe and this not coming up is all of a sudden just going down the drain because at the end of the season it comes up. It's very sad. Very sad, especially because we get it here around Christmas time when you want to be with family. You want to go see family. You can't, it's hard to tell a guy, hey, yeah, you can't go home for Christmas. You can't go see your family and do all that when we've got to stay safe and all be home together and be ready for a football game. You know, something that may not matter to some, but to a lot it does, you know. And I saw one thing the other day, and this is where I'll kind of end on this as far as that conversation goes to jump out of it. I'm fairly certain that this is going to be just like the flu. I don't think this is ever going to go away. I think every year there's going to be a flu shot or a vaccine shot, just like there are COVID shot, I guess, just like there is a flu shot. And I think it's going to be just random, hoping that you catch the right strain now that there's another strain of COVID. And what is it, Omicron, whatever it is. I think that this is just going to continue to be a thing. And the more that the media pushes it, the more that we're just going to have all these issues continue to rise. And I think, again, I think it's back to it's your choice. Nobody's fussing at the fact that you do or don't get a flu shot. So, and I know everybody's like, oh, well, this is much worse. Maybe. If you look at the numbers in a lot of this, it's not. But then I also understand that, and again, I'm not in the medical field, but I also understand that this attacks things differently. You know, in different people, we don't know who it does and doesn't affect. You know, I get that. Hey, I've had the flu before, and I thought I was going to die. I was on the couch for like a week and couldn't see. So I get it. You don't know how it's going to affect somebody. So, again, I'll just kind of jump off of that, but I don't think it's going anywhere, especially if it's media-driven. I think it will stay here and continue. I just hate that the way that this college football season could end is by forfeits for a team to win a national championship. To me, again, these teams have worked so, so hard to get to this point for something like that to happen. Again, it's just my opinion, but it is what it is. I'm looking forward to seeing how some of these bowl games go. You know, this all kind of gets started now as far as the SEC goes. There's a lot going on in the top 25 as far as others. There was one game I saw that's supposed to be like really, really early in the morning. We've already had a few go final. I'll kind of run through some of those. It started on December 17th, Middle Tennessee beating Toledo 31-24. Coastal Carolina squeaking by Northern Illinois 47-41. Then UAB taking down BYU. How about that UAB coming in this one? I think that was a last-minute touchdown there to take down number 13, BYU, 31-28. That matters a little bit for Georgia. Hey, UAB at the end of the season was 9-4. They're not ranked, but they're 9-4. A team that Georgia absolutely waxed. And they come in this one and beat the number 13 team, BYU, in the nation, 31-28. Hey, that's pretty good. Number 23, Louisiana, even though they don't have Billy Napier, taking down Marshall 36-21. Western Kentucky, Drummond, App State, 59-38. How about the quarterback there? Breaking Joe Burrow's record. Breaking the record, 422 yards in this game, 6 touchdowns. 6 tutties. What a game. What a game for him. Fresno State taking down UTEP 31-24. Liberty beating Eastern Michigan 56-20. Utah State beating Oregon State 24-13. Tulsa over Old Dominion 30-17. Then you got San Diego State over UTSA 38-24. Wyoming over Kent State 52-38. And that's where we are. That's where we are. We move forward from there. I wanted to see 11 a.m. on a Monday the 27th. Golly, that's an early morning. It's an early morning. I mean, it's not early at all, actually, but, you know, 11 o'clock playing football that early in the morning seems a little tough. I could have swore there was a game that's, like, really, really early in the morning, though. But I don't see it now. The earliest I see is 11 a.m. Maybe I was wrong. I'm wrong about it a lot. I get it. But, anyway, we'll look forward. We'll look forward to these college football playoff games coming up, these bowl games. We'll kind of let's see, I'll be out of town next week, so I may, let me just double check this real quick. Let me double check the SEC schedule, because I may come in, if there's enough worth coming back through these. Let's see, Florida will have played, but that's it. I mean, Florida and UCF will be the only game that will have played before next week. And that was tomorrow, so not really a lot we're going to have to break down as far as some of those games go. I will be out of pocket next week, so the episode that you will get will be a week from this coming Sunday. And that is, let me just look on the calendar so I can kind of let you guys know. So it will be the 2nd, January 2nd. Yeah, so January 2nd, I should be able to get back to you guys, and we will have a lot to go through because we will have just about all the bowl games wrapped up, with exception to, yeah, the LSU-Kansas State game, and we will also know who's playing in the national championship. We'll break down as many of these games as we can, especially that Cincinnati-Alabama game and the Georgia-Michigan game in the college football playoff. We can break down a little bit real quick before we jump out of here. This Mizzou and Army game, again, back and forth. Really good game. I was watching a little bit of it earlier. Again, it's right here at Christmas time. I've been wrapping gifts, so I was kind of in and out, paying attention to this one. But we'll jump to it. Army ends up pulling this one out again. A field goal at the last second, 24-22 to beat them, beat Missouri. This is the way things line up. Let me just look here. Both teams about the same on third down efficiency. Missouri 6-for-11. Army 5-for-14. Check this out. Missouri 0-for-1 on fourth downs, though. Army, go for it on fourth down, big guy. They're 5-for-5, 100% on fourth down efficiency. Going for it five times, getting it every time. Total yards, Missouri 433, Army only 306. You're getting outgained by almost 130 yards. Almost 130 yards, and you still win the game. And it was all on the ground for Army, clearly. 238 yards through the air for Missouri. Only 95 through the air for Army, but 211 on the ground, 195. So this game was very, very lopsided, really, when you look at it like that. Missouri's throwing the ball for a lot more and running the ball for almost the same amount, but yet, and yardage outgained, but still getting beat by two, field goal at the end. Penalties, I mean, they're pretty even, 5-for-40, 4-for-35, one turnover for Missouri. Lost a fumble, so time of possession almost even. It's kind of surprising. Surprising that Missouri ended up losing this game. Again, I was too in and out to really be able to give you a lot of details about it, so I apologize about that. But just out of assumption here, I would assume that just means that, I guess, Army just got really good field position from the punter in this game. Army had no punt returns and no kick returns in this game. Missouri had three field goals. They made them all. Army went 1-for-2, and that one field goal being the winner from Cole Talley. There was only one punt from Missouri, three punts from Army. So there was only one punt in the entire game from Missouri. So I'm assuming maybe Army just put Missouri deep. But I don't know. If you're only punting the ball one time, that's not happening very much, is it? This is strange. I might have to go back and look at this one and see exactly what happened in this one. But we'll look at some of the leaders in this one. Brady Cook, 27-34, 238, one touchdown. Had a good night. Had a really good night through the air like that. On the ground, Elijah Young, 75 yards. Dawson Downing, 69 yards. Brady Cook also running the ball, 53 yards for a touchdown in this one. Through the air, Kiki Chisholm, 5 touches, 64 yards. Barrett Bannister, 53 yards. Kiki also with a touchdown through the air there. Let's see if there was any other big ones. That's kind of how it lines up. Three quarterbacks for Army in this one. Christian Anderson goes 3-for-4, 60 yards. Jabari Laws, 2-for-4, 21 yards. And then Tahir Tyler, 1-for-1, 14 yards and a touchdown. And is that guy, that guy's actually a running back? So that must have been a little bit of trickeration there. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool, though. But in the end, Army ends up taking down the Missouri Tigers, 24-22. Army improving to 9-4 on the season. Missouri falls to 6-7. 6-7. Rough game and rough way to start for the SEC there. But really, I think this one was kind of leaning Army's way anyways. But, hey, congrats out to Army on that one. And that's where that is again. I will come back into this one and we will talk a little bit about the Florida game. And then we've got plenty of the other games that we'll have to get to as well. Like I was talking about, a lot to get to when I come back to you guys, hopefully on the second. So we'll look forward to that one kind of moving forward. But other than that, you guys make sure you subscribe and follow. If you guys feel like supporting the show, again, the link will be in the description below. Otherwise, I will check in with you guys in the new year.